Welcome to the History of Little Europe, episode 1.15, Do It for DeFore. So, in the last episode, we covered the rise and subsequent fall of the French Revolution within Switzerland. Today, we will cover the subsequent fallout as the Swiss state struggles to understand exactly what it was supposed to be. Now, while Switzerland has come out the other side of the French Revolution, the rest of Europe is going to need two more years to figure out the whole Napoleon thing. So, while they deal with that, Switzerland has just enough time to begin tearing itself apart. After all, they had no official government at this point. The old Confederacy had been shown for all its outdated features, but the Republican institutions were so linked to the now-hated French Revolutionary Empire that it had to go too. With no obvious solution in sight, the cantons were at each other's necks as soon as the Austrians went over the other side of the mountains. Immediately, various governments sprang up across the nation. Both Geneva and Bienne, having been annexed by France, proclaimed themselves republics. Meanwhile, the remaining cantons split into two separate diets, with a conservative diet based out of Bern and a more progressive diet made up of the newer members of the Confederation. It's worth pointing out that these were drawn mostly either in support of or opposition to the re-annexation of the newly formed cantons, but the division flowed through to the matter of reform and governance as well. Eventually, though, the sides came together and concluded the Federal Pact of 1815. By this, a unified diet was established, though it only had jurisdiction over international policy. The cantons were still tasked with policy within their borders, as well as the upkeep of the army. And, for the first time, the nation was to be called the Swiss Confederation, a name it has maintained up until the current date. With governmental structure now firmly established, the cantons took the opportunity to regress several decades. The right to vote was once again stripped from the common people and only granted to the nobility. Customs were established between the cantons, the single currency adopted during the acts of mediation was replaced with a variety of local denominations, and progressive territories were forced to repeal legislation by more conservative states. And yet, the Swiss maintained their policy of accepting political refugees, causing an influx of liberal ideas and causing ire among the conservative nations of Europe. And while conservative national spirit was strong following the removal of French dominance, the Swiss slowly began drifting away from this stance, unable to escape the advantages of a progressive government. This phase of Swiss history is known as the Regeneration, with several cantons, namely Zurich, Bern, Freiburg, and Vaud, adopting new, more liberal constitutions. Elsewhere, though, the regeneration failed. In Neuchâtel, and much of central Switzerland, liberal sentiments had not yet come through, and thus there was little motivation to adopt new systems. Basel, in particular, was hard hit. A brief civil war concluded with the more progressive countryside breaking away from the conservative city, forming the new cantons of Basel Town and Basel Country. For those of you keeping score, this now marks the third set of so-called half-cantons in Switzerland, the others being Appenzell-Ausserrhoden and Innerrhoden, which split during the Protestant Reformation, and Obwalden and Nidwalden, who have been somewhere between together and separate since the three-fourths cantons first came together. This is today why, depending on who you ask, Jura is either the 23rd or 26th canton. For most purposes, these half-cantons are completely independent, but there has been some talk at various times of recreating the old boundaries. But now, Switzerland is in a very messy state. On the one hand, you have a very recent divide between liberal cantons promoting unity and progress versus conservative cantons promoting independence. But you also have the older divide between the Protestants and Catholics. The latter may have been centuries old, but it was still a very touchy subject, and the former had already brought various parties into military conflict. Worse still is that, while not perfectly lined up, these two divisions correspond closely to each other. There was a very clear group of progressive Protestant cantons and conservative Catholic ones, and it doesn't take a genius to figure out that pretty soon bullets will be flying. The situation deteriorated fast. A new breed of liberals, preaching such insane ideas as democracy and centralization, began to amass support. In our time, we refer to them as the radicals, but for contemporaries, they were known as revolutionaries. In Aargau, a Catholic peasant uprising led the radical governor to pass legislation closing all monasteries and convents, directly in violation of the Federal Pact. a compromise was reached, but both sides were still left inflamed. In Luzern, a bill passed in 1845 entrusted education to the Jesuits, who, you will recall, were the great bastion of papal authority. The radicals and liberals were scandalized, but unable to reach the majority in the Diet needed to do something. The battle lines were soon drawn. In 1843, seven conservative cantons came together and formed a military alliance. Uri, Schweiz, Obwalden, Nidwalden, Zug, Luzern, and Freiburg together concluded the Sonderbund, or Special Alliance. In 1844, they would be joined by the Valais, while Neuchâtel and Appenzell-Innerrhoden, despite being staunchly Catholic, remained neutral. Meanwhile, the radicals were consolidating power elsewhere. They staged successful coups in both Geneva and Vaud, as well as winning the elections in St. Gallen. This, coupled with support from the liberal cantons, gave them a majority in the Diet, and in 1847, they voted the dissolution of the Sonderbund. Out of options, they declared independence, and civil war was on. Despite the deep-rooted passions that sparked this conflict, the entire war would be concluded in only 3 weeks, due in large part to the expert maneuvering by the Federal Army. And since a Swiss civil war is serious business, we will conduct a more thorough run-through of the conflict. The Sonderbund debated fervently who their general would be, eventually settling on one Guillaume de Kalbermatten of the Valais. After Kalbermatten declined the appointment, Colonel Jean-Ulrich de Salé-Soglio of Grisson was elected and sworn in as Commander-in-Chief on the 15th of January, 1847. Although a Protestant himself, Salé-Soglio was a staunch conservative and a strong opponent of the radicals. The Sonderbund cantons, except for Luzern and Freiburg, sought and obtained the assent of their popular assemblies for general conscription. Also in October, several fortifications were built on Sonderbund territory, notably in Valais, where Kalbermatten's forces were gathered by the end of October, with a plan of invading Vaud. Meanwhile, the Federal Diet elected General Guillaume Henri Dufour of Geneva as Commander-in-Chief of the Federal Army, despite his reluctance. In his letter of acceptance to the Diet, Dufour emphasized that he would, quote, do everything in order to alleviate the inevitable evils of war. On October 24th, immediately prior to taking the oath of office, Dufour requested explanations concerning his orders, which were written in German, and, after a scathing remark by the representative of Vaud, declined the office and left the meeting of the Diet. It took two sessions behind closed doors and a delegation of the representatives of Geneva to convince Dufour to reconsider and to be sworn in on the 25th of October. Despite his behavior here, Dufour would prove himself as an incredibly skilled commander. The first actions were taken by the Sonderbund. Troops from Uri seized the undefended Gotthard Pass in the early days of November, thereby keeping the connection between central Switzerland and the Valais open. But contrary to triumphant proclamations in the Sonderbund newspapers, the action failed to effectively separate the federal troops in Ticino from those of the Grisons. The first deaths of the war occurred on November 4th, when an officer and soldier from Uri were killed by soldiers from Ticino. On November 7th, Sonderbund's forces, under direct command of Jean-Ulrich de Salé-Soglio, prepared to launch a second offensive into Aargau. After destroying a bridge over the River Reuss, they entered Aargau on November 12th in order to split the federal forces into two halves and relieve Freiburg, which was surrounded by Confederate territory. But after a few advances, they were stopped and retreated with losses into the canton of Luzern. It was now the federal army's turn to act. On the 9th of November, Dufour launched the first offensive against Freiburg, which was not only closest to Bern, the seat of the Federal Diet, but was also isolated from the other insurgent states, and so easier to take. Its capture would also allow Dufour to concentrate his forces in the center of the country. By the 11th of November, federal troops seized the enclaves of Freiburg and the canton of Vaud, and most of the district of Mürten without resistance, with the Freiburgois troops retreating to defend the capital. The Freiburgois commander was successfully fooled by the advance of René's reserve troops as to the direction of attack. Meanwhile, Dufour brought a battery of 60 guns into position, with which he intended to bring down the fortifications of the city of Freiburg. On the morning of November 13th, with the assault ready to begin, Dufour sent a Vaudois lieutenant into Freiburg under a flag of truce. The emissary's message revealed Dufour's forces and plan of attack to the Fribourgeois government, and called on them to surrender in order to prevent a murderous battle. The besieged Fribourgeois asked for an armistice for the day, which Dufour accepted. But, because of mistaken orders, the Vaudois troops launched an attack of the fortress after a brief artillery exchange. Nonetheless, on the morning of November 14th, two delegates of the governing council of Freiburg brought Dufour the news of the canton's surrender, decided by majority vote. While Confederate Switzerland rejoiced at the news, their surrender was a bitter disappointment to the Fribourgeois troops, who had perhaps looked to win either spoils or glory. The act of surrender was signed by Freiburg would soon become a template for the other Sonderbund cantons. With it, Freiburg undertook to leave the Sonderbund, to disarm its soldiers, and to provide for the federal occupation troops. On the 15th of November, a new Fribourgeois government of a radical bent was elected, who, as its first act, expelled the order of the Jesuits from the canton. On both sides of the war, the fall of Freiburg was commented on by the press and the political leaders. In Luzern and Valais, proclamations were read to the troops, assuring them that this setback would have no effect on the coalition. On the federal side, public confidence and morale of the army grew. As soon as the new government was installed, Dufour left Freiburg for central Switzerland with his army. On the morning of November 17th, the troops of Uri, with some reinforcements from Nidwalden, advanced into Ticino towards Airolo, which fell, then, the day after, towards Faido, and on the 21st, towards Biasca, where they stopped to await reinforcements. In Argel, Dufour prepared his forces and his battle plan until November 20th. He declined to equip his forces, with the Congreve rockets offered to him by the local arsenal, wishing to keep casualties at an absolute minimum. To the surprise of both sides, the parliament of the canton of Zug voted for surrender on the 21st of November by a large majority. The federal troops which entered the city of Zug unopposed the day after were acclaimed by the population, and a few months later, a new government would be elected. Dufour launched his principal offensive according to plan on November 23rd. The 4th and 5th divisions followed the Reuss Valley to the south, each on one side. They were supported by the 3rd division descending along the Sur, and by the 2nd division, which left Langenthal to arrive at the Reuss north of Luzern. The reserve artillery was concentrated on the bridgehead of Gisikon, thus pinning the forces of Luzern against attack by 5 army columns. The federal army constructed several pontoon bridges to cross the Reuss. At this point, the Sonderbund commander, von Salé-Soglio, had concentrated his troops on an elevation, well hidden behind trees and underbrush. After 2 hours, the battle resulted in a federal victory after von Salé-Soglio, wounded in the head by a mortar detonation, ordered a retreat to Ebikon. The Battle of Isikon was the longest and, with 37 dead and some 100 wounded, the bloodiest of the war. It is, to date, the last pitched battle in the history of the Swiss Army. It was also the first battle in military history in which dedicated wagons were employed to treat the wounded on the battlefield. These horse-drawn ambulances were operated by volunteers and nurses from Zurich, forming the foundations of what would become the Red Cross. Also on November 23rd, while the 2nd and 3rd Federal Divisions proceeded without opposition to Luzern, the 5th Division engaged troops from Schweiz near Meierskappel. The Sonderbund forces resisted for a while before retreating. This federal victory caught the connection between Luzern and Zug, another of Dufour's objectives. In his report to the Diet of November 23rd, Dufour wrote with satisfaction that the troops of Schweiz had withdrawn to the other side of Lake Zug and were now cut off from the rest of the Sonderbund army. The federal victories at Gisikon and Meierskappel brought federal troops within striking distance of Luzern. On the evening of November 23rd, the leadership of Luzern and the Jesuits abandoned the city and fled to Uri. On the following morning, the victorious federal troops entered the city unopposed. On the 26th of November, 1847, the Sonderbund Council dissolved without a formal vote. Between the 25th and 29th of November, federal troops moved peacefully into central Switzerland and Valais. Unterwalden surrendered on November 25th, followed by Schweiz on the following day, and then Uri on November 27th. The last member of the Sonderbund, Valais, surrendered on November 29th, bringing the war to an end. Across both sides, a total of 86 were killed and 500 wounded. Given that close to 200,000 total soldiers were mobilized, these numbers are absolutely incredible. The Sonderbund governments were forced to resign, and in Freiburg, Luzern, and Valais, the liberals gained power. Neuchâtel and Appenzell-Innerrhoden were taxed for not providing troops to the federal army. Neuchâtel paid 300,000 francs, and Appenzell paid 15,000 into a fund to support war widows and orphans. By February 1848, all federal troops withdrew from the occupied cantons. For his work in reunifying the Confederation as quickly and bloodlessly as possible, Dufour was nationally lauded. He received 60,000 francs from the government in thanks of his work, today worth some 2 million, and lived out the rest of his life in the position he desired most, the head of the Swiss Federal Office of Topography. Yes, that means map-making, and no, I'm not joking. The dude liked maps. He would die in 1875, and his picture was printed on the 20-franc note up until 1980. Apparently, the Swiss have stopped printing famous people on their currency, but I, for one, am adamant that they make an exception. Next time, we will cover the immediate fallout from this conflict, as the new unified state attempts to create a constitution that can satisfy the radicals while maintaining the Sonderbund. Until then, share the show, rate the show, subscribe to the show, send me emails at historyoflittleeurope@gmail.com, and until next time, pozdravljanje, ciao, and goodbye.